You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, with more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
Welcome to Safety Wars for Thursday, March 19th, 2026. Where's this year going? They say, and who's the they? I say that a lot. Someone says to me, who's they? Society. Our leaders. Don't talk religion, politics, or money. So, of course, what do? I talk about religion and politics. Our conversations are pretty boring out there, and people who don't know how to have uncomfortable conversations, people who don't know, want to, or know about religion and politics, what do they talk about? Sports? Who was it? Eleanor Roosevelt. Successful people talk about ideas, right? Average people talk about, some things that are going on, something like that, and what? Unsuccessful people talk about people. Talk about political ideas. Talk about religion. Those are the interesting conversations. And learn to talk about things without being confrontational. For example, I talked about St. Patrick the other day. Boy, did I get some not so nice messages out there. Don't care. All right. But what's the idea? If I'm wrong, tell me where I'm wrong. We'll discuss it. If I'm right, say, hey, Jim, that's right. And let's add on to it. Spread the word. Not afraid of being wrong. Not afraid of being corrected in religion or politics. We can't be. We're at a stage in this country where we have a whole generation of people who do not and cannot discuss things reasonably. Everything's always an attack. Everything's always against their ego. They see it as an assault on them. You don't believe what I believe, so therefore you're blah, blah, blah. I used to have a boss that way. Mensa member. Anytime that you disagreed with him, you were an idiot. Well, you can't have an opinion on that. You're not smart and intelligent like me. I'm in Mensa. And guess what? He belonged to a lot of, I won't mention names of the clubs, but there were clubs other than Mensa. I'm not saying all people from Mensa are like that. I met some people at Mensa. Wonderful people. They're like everybody. It's the bell curve. Some good, some bad, most right in the middle. Most organizations are that way. But some of the groups that he was involved with, they were like, oh, yeah, we're, you know, we are this, we are that, we are, you know, we are the elite. We can make decisions for you. We know what is best. Our opinion matters only. Yours does not. You don't want to get into it. Who the hell wants to live in a society that way? So often what we hear the HOP people say, right, human and organizational performance people like us, what we say is have better conversations. Isn't that where we make progress? We have better conversations. Maybe we have disagreements. We talk things out, and hopefully we're both there. No, results, and the end result is that we're better for it. With that, have a little bit of fun. And that's what's missing. That's what I'm going to talk about. Have better conversations. What's on tap for tonight? We're going to be sharing, like, I'm trying to keep to the non-safety news like one day a week, and that's usually Thursday, heading into the weekend. And let me point out something to you. When something really happens, when does it happen? I mean, a big announcement, a government action, anything like that. When does that happen? Friday afternoon, especially if it's going to be a long weekend. This isn't a long weekend. So what I'm expecting is a big announcement on like Good Friday or Maundy Thursday, right before the Easter holiday here. Reason being is, why do you think that is, especially on Friday? When do the Sunday shows tape their programs or record their programs now? Any idea? They record them on Friday afternoon. And right by the time Friday 5 o'clock rolls around, everything's all edited, everything is all set up for the weekend. If the government does something Friday afternoon, Friday night, guess what? It's not going to make it to the Sunday program. Which means that it could be other groups other than the government. That means that they're controlling the narrative over the weekend. And then on Monday morning, everybody gets in, the news people, 4 o'clock in the morning, the overnight people on from Sunday to Monday, they're working hard on all this stuff, and guess what? By Monday, a lot of people would have forgotten what happened on Friday afternoon. Or they get their ducks in a row over the weekend. Again, to control the narrative. With that, I know of a company who was sold. When did they make the announcement that they were sold? They made it on the last day of the fiscal year. And it was a long weekend. It was like September 30th, right? September 30 days. It was on a Friday. Sent out an email about 4:30 on Monday morning. We're opening up as a new company. We were bought out by someone. Most people don't check, especially in those days, most people didn't check their emails. That was before the advent of these things. All right. And what do you think happened? Monday morning they come in, they open their mailbox. Oh, we're a different company. Happened over the weekend. Actually, when I think of it, I know two companies like that. And on the way into work, I called one of my good friends, lifelong friends, works for the company. I called her up. And I said, hey, is it true that your company is laying off like one-third of its workforce because they're being bought by somebody else? And she said, Jimmy, where did you hear that? I said, I heard it on the 7 o'clock news just now. They didn't say anything on Friday. So they went in there, and it turns out that they illegally were laying people off because you have over a certain number, you have to give a notice. And it was big, you know, the groove had hit the fan there. So Friday afternoon, watch this Friday with the war and everything else, what announcements are going to be made. And especially when it's going to be the Friday before a holiday or a long weekend. And that, and I'll just go into our intro.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Oh, yeah. I would say I want to be on the weekend. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. It usually doesn't. So if I say I'm going to be on the weekend, don't really rely on that. No, I'm working projects all week. And then I get home, and God knows what the hell I got going on. Between a wife, two cats, a father-in-law, and most importantly, two children, right? There's no telling what I have going on when I get home on Friday afternoon. We have some other stuff. Yes, this is Safety Wars. A lot of news today, like I said during the intro, we have a lot of stuff going on here. Now this is the one day a week we do talk about the regular news. I make it a point. Well, that's the majority of that. So, the world's most powerful man, Chuck Norris, our thoughts, prayers, and hopes go out to him. He's 86 years old. He was hospitalized in Hawaii after a mystery medical emergency today. We're putting out some very positive thoughts with him and for him. With that, did you hear about the... apparently he contributed to it, and he also gets a real big kick out of it. The Chuck Norris page, where it says all the things, right? So, for example, Chuck Norris doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the world down, right? And all these other crazy sayings on there. Now, wishing him well out there, 86. I tell you what, he looks fantastic. That their exercise board that he advertises, you know, him and his wife. I think, who's his wife? I forget. I know. His wife is Mrs. Norris. With that. Oh, he did the commercial, I think, with Chrissy Brinkley there. The martial arts icon attributes his health to a strict routine, including regular physical training, a balanced diet, and his lifelong passion for the martial arts. Has also credited his positive mindset for contributing to his vitality. Tomorrow's safety thing, safety, no, meeting. And I hold that one of my projects on Friday morning. Power of positivity. We all have worked on those projects where they're, you know, things just don't go right. And what happens is you can have a choice. You can be like, oh, I'm dreading this. Oh, I hate going in there. Or you can be positive. Right? You can look at that challenge as being another opportunity to succeed. Right? You can look at that in a very optimistic point of view, like Thomas Edison when he was trying to find out how to make the light bulb. Well, you failed 1,000 times. No, I found out 1,000 ways not to do it. Right, all in there with that. With that. Now, here we have, with that. And the thing is this. Positivity and optimism is such a powerful weapon, especially if you want to be a leader, that everybody tries to knock you down. A lot of people try to knock you down with that. That's how powerful it is. What a powerful thing it is. Now, it's the things that they don't tell you sometimes, or things going on in the background, that tells a big part of stories. Here we have alien.gov. Mystery grows after White House says stay tuned. This is from MSN, a story by Greta Cross in USA Today. Two newly registered federal website domains, alien.gov and aliens.gov, are drawing attention after records show they were created this week by a U.S. government agency, fueling speculation as questions around UFOs and extraterrestrial, all right? Life returned to the spotlight. The timing is notable. The domain surfaced weeks after President Donald Trump said he would push for the release of government files related to UFOs and extraterrestrial life, reigniting debate over what information the federal government has kept classified. Right? Trump called for more alien files, UFO disclosure bill passed in 2023. Why did the federal government create alien.gov and aliens.gov? They have not told us anything, and neither website is live. Okay, we'll see. Stay tuned on that one. Here's one out of telegraph.co.uk. The number of times you should brush your teeth per day to ward off dementia. As recent research linked gum disease to 50 health conditions, here's what you can do to stave off gingivitis and protect yourself. Right? And they put it behind a paywall. Aye, aye, aye. Let's see here. Okay, no, we're not going to do this. I got to look at this. Sorry, folks. Number of times, and then they build it up, and then they, I tell you what, let me get this. Okay, we'll revisit that. Hold on. Let's do this. I'm sorry, folks. Many times should I brush my teeth? We're putting it into AI to prevent dementia. At least twice a day, morning and before bed, which is most important. Right? The key reasons, gum disease, peritonitis allows harmful bacteria into the bloodstream. These bacteria and inflammatory markers can reach the brain. Chronic inflammation is a known contributor to cognitive decline. All right. One bacterium often discussed is Polyphoromonas gingivalis, linked to gum disease and found in brains of Alzheimer's patients. All right. So, okay. Take care of your teeth. And they will take care of you. Here's one we've been following for an awful long time here. So for the complete disclosure, I am involved in one of these cases. Not with Kevin Spacey, but in another context. Kevin Spacey settles with sexual assault accusers before the London civil trial here for an undisclosed amount. Right. The men allege that Spacey had fooled around with him for between 2000 and 2013, and in November it was determined the actor would face a new trial. Details of the settlement were not given. Spacey, who has denied all allegations against him, was previously acquitted of sexual assault charges brought on by four men in a UK criminal trial in 2023. Two of those men then filed civil cases at London's High Court, right? I guess they have a legal system like we have. So I'm going to be traveling the next few weeks, and this is of great concern to me because we have in this country, the Department of Homeland Security has partial shutdown. This is from CBS News. Skylar Henry is the author. More than 40% of TSA officers called out on work Tuesday were at the airport in Houston, one of three major airports in the U.S., where a third of workers called out that day. The workers aren't getting paid, leading to a spike in call-out rates as a partial government shutdown over funding industry continues. So we covered a story the other day where they're selling their blood and reportedly other bodily fluids to make ends meet. At Houston's William P. Hobby Airport, 40.8% of TSA workers called out on Tuesday. How did they get that information that quick is what I want to know. Across the U.S., 9.88 of all TSA officers called out Tuesday. The morale is getting worse by the day. And we're at war. Oh, by the way, right when we need them the most. Because apparently there's been a lot of stuff not making the national news as far as sleeper cells and stuff where it's being framed as not a problem. Right? Travel woes mount for Philadelphia flyers as CSA closes more security checkpoints. Philadelphia International Airport is the latest major U.S. airport to temporarily close security checkpoints as more TSA officers call out to work. They're saying like 4-hour delays. You got to show up 5 hours earlier. This is like in the 1980s, man. Right? You talk about Back to the Future, 1980s. Maybe we're going to have short gas lines again like 1978 before long here. Current TSA lines are going to look like child's play if another paycheck goes unpaid, Sean Duffy warns. That's the Department of Transportation head. Well, maybe they should do something about it. How's that? The current chaos engulfing airports as TSA absences spike across the United States will look like child's play if a partial government shutdown is not quickly brought to an end, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy warned on Tuesday. Talking on CNBC, Duffy also warned that small airports might need to shutter. Travelers will be forced to endure extensive lines to get through TSA checkpoints, and air travel could come to an almost complete stop. Well, let's see what's going to happen. How's that? Okay. Phoenix tops out at 102 degrees for a city's hottest March day on record. A historic March heat wave pushed Phoenix into record-setting territory on Wednesday. Mercury at Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport, which the National Weather Service uses for the city's official readings. Well, hopefully you don't need a TSA agent for that. Set a March 18th heat record peaking at 102 degrees. The previous hot record high for the date, 95 degrees, was set in 2017. I mean, send some heat over here to the East Coast, man. I'm still freaking freezing over here. Again, right from AccuWeather, record-shattering March scorcher, 70 million to bake in summer-like heat dome into weekend. Drones over base where Rubio and Hegseth live raised security concerns. U.S. officials detected unidentified drones above the Washington Army base where Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth live, according to the three people briefed on the situation. Officials have not determined where they came from, two of the people said. Now, do you know that the federal government and its we were issued on our federal projects this week, 3 months too late, I might add, that federal government will not allow non-U.S. drones. They're like the Jones Act, right, we talked about the other day, will not let non-United States drones over things, over on their federal projects, federal job sites, federal property, that sort of thing. I was talking to a drone pilot, and he said, well, good luck, because there are no American-made drones that could fit the bill there. So I think there's an opportunity, one, to start making them, if you're so inclined, I tell you, we've come to rely, just like with the smartphones, right? We've come to rely on drone technology on a lot of our projects out there, even in the environmental business. When they want to assess an oil spill, for example, rather than it used to be, well, we're going to fly the U.S. Coast Guard red helicopter over the scene. Well, now we're going to get a drone and fly that over the scene. Not so fast. Not when you're dealing with federal stuff here. Multiple drones were spotted over Fort Leslie McNair on a single night in the last 10 days, the official said, prompting increased security measures and a meeting at the White House to discuss how to respond. The drone sightings in Washington come as the U.S. issued global security alert for overseas diplomatic posts and locked down several domestic bases because of the threats. This week, Joint Base acquired Dix Lakehurst in New Jersey. That in New Jersey speak, that is about 10 miles south of Exit 7 on the New Jersey Turnpike. This week, Joint Base acquired Dix Lakehurst in New Jersey and MacDill Air Force Base in Florida raised their, I don't know what exit that is in Florida, raised their force protection level to Charlie, a designation that means that commander has intelligence indicating an attack or danger is possible. The only higher alert is Delta, right? Well, and that's when an attack has occurred or is anticipated. We're going to take a little bit of a commercial break here, and we'll be right on back to you.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Posel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Posel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Posel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
Now time for FSN News.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kate Fisher. U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says the war with Iran is on track, but declined to say how or when it will end. In a press briefing, Hegseth said Thursday would, once again, be the most intense day of attacks in the nearly three-week-long conflict. Tony Waterman has more from Washington.
Hegseth has walked away from the 4 to 5 week time frame he touted when this war began, an indication perhaps that it could stretch longer as it intensifies and widens. General Dan Kane said U.S. warplanes are now flying deeper into Iranian territory to strike its military capabilities, and there are reports President Trump is considering deploying thousands of troops on the ground. Hegseth was adamant that this conflict wouldn't become a forever war. When asked about a report that the Pentagon is seeking an additional $200 billion to fund the fight, Hegseth said it takes money to kill bad guys and replenish weapons stockpiles.
The White House is trying to reassure Americans as oil prices jumped to $118 a barrel on Thursday. President Trump said he would do whatever was necessary to ease the crisis, but that it was temporary. The challenge is no longer just reopening the Strait of Hormuz, a choke point for one-fifth of the world's oil supply, but now the attacks and counterattacks on oil and gas production across the region have injected new uncertainty. From Dubai, Fiona Mee reports.
Let's start with Qatar. The foreign ministry saying there was extensive damage at its main Ras Laffan gas facility. and several other LNG plants were also hit. Qatar strongly condemning the strikes, expelling Iran's military and security attaches. Here in the UAE, operations were suspended in Abu Dhabi's Habshani gas facility after missile debris fell in the area. And the Bab oil field was also targeted here, the foreign ministry branding it an Iranian terrorist attack. Very strong words from Abu Dhabi today.
Meanwhile, President Trump has told the Japanese Prime Minister that he expects Japan to step up in helping the U.S. in its war with Iran. Our U.S. correspondent Mitch McCann reports.
Sitting next to Japan's Prime Minister in the White House, Sanae Takaichi, President Trump told reporters that he expects Tokyo to step up, saying that Japan takes a large volume of its oil from shipments that pass through the Strait of Hormuz. At the same time, President Trump appeared to contradict those comments by saying we've had tremendous support and relationship with Japan on everything. They are really stepping up to the plate. In an unusual moment, Mr. Trump was asked why he didn't coordinate with allies ahead of the war. He said the US didn't tell anyone and added, who knows better about surprise than Japan, before saying, why didn't you tell me about Pearl Harbor?
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks, looking in more detail again today at the role AI has been playing in the war on Iran, while an official Pentagon investigation continues. Even some top Republican lawmakers in Washington have already apologized over a Tomahawk missile strike on the very first day of the U.S. and Israeli war that destroyed a girls' school in Iran, killing at least 165 people, most of them children. The school was situated on terrain that had previously been part of an Iranian military base, and the strike, which some already claim constituted an American war crime, fueled questions about whether AI may have been involved in selecting the target. We don't know whether that was the case, but Jacob Judah, a journalist specializing in security and technology at the Financial Times, says artificial intelligence is already playing a major role in helping military leaders identify possible targets.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's like AI in everyone's life, right? It's just that this time is determining whether people live or not. AI is only as good as the kind of data that you give it, right? So if at some point someone has compiled a map of Iranian military targets, for example, that suggests that this building or whatever it is, a military target, AI kind of may act on that intelligence and suggest a strike target that includes bases which shouldn't be being hit.
Tomorrow, wrapping our week of special coverage. Old school tech and the role it's playing in the conflict. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
Our main news again. U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says the war with Iran is on track, but declined to say how or when it will end. President Trump says he expects Japan to step up as he seeks support for securing the Strait of Hormuz. And Iran has retaliated on Gulf energy sites as fuel prices soar. That's the latest feature story news. Kate Fisher reporting.
I couldn't resist that there, right? Eyes in the sky. Going out to those folks at McGuire Air Force Base in Fort Dix, New Jersey. And Safety Warriors, they had that song out during the whole debacle in New Jersey with the drones, right? December and January 2024. And then Trump gets in there and he's, I got to get to the bottom of this. And he said, well, was nothing that was authorized. Oh, okay. Great. And I guess you just forget about it. What else you got here in the news? Armageddon scenario for gas markets as Qatar or gutter. I've always heard it pronounced gutter, but it's Qatar, Q-A-T-A-R, hit by missiles. Traders and analysts warn of the lasting disruption after damage to a facility that supplies a fifth of the world's LNG, liquefied natural gas. I mean, they have one of these liquefied natural gas tanks, man. It's going. It's going to be like an atomic blast here. As emergency workers sifted through the smoldering wreckage of Qatar's Ras Laffan complex on Thursday morning, traders in Europe and Asia were waking up to a fresh energy crisis. In normal times, a fifth of the world's supply of liquefied natural gas flows from Ras Laffan, a vast industrial site almost three times the size of Paris, built over three decades at a cost of hundreds of billions of dollars. LNG terminals are some of the biggest, most complex constructions in human history, and Ras Laffan is the largest of them all, turning huge gas reserves into a super chilled fuel that can be shipped around the world, at least before the Iranian missiles arrived. Right? I tell you what, prices are up on that and everything else. After Iran escalates attacks, and this is from the AP, after Iran escalates attacks on Gulf energy sites, Israel says it will stop striking its gas field. Right? Iran intensified its attacks on oil and natural gas facilities around the Gulf on Thursday, raising its stakes in a war that is sending shockwaves through energy markets and the global economy. The strikes in retaliation for an Israeli attack on a key Iranian gas field sent fuel prices soaring and risk drawing Iran's Arab neighbors directly into the conflict. Global fuel supplies were already under pressure. Well, that's one hell of a pun, right? Gas under pressure, because of Iran's stranglehold on the Strait of Hormuz, a strategic waterway through which a fifth of world's oil is transported. I was talking to a merchant mariner the last couple of days, and he retired from the Merchant Marine early 2010s, and what he told me was, when they were going through, this is on a U.S. flagged ship, when they were going through the Straits of Hormuz, all lights were shut off on the ship, and it was full speed ahead on that. So we've been expecting problems with Iran for an awfully long time. Two shipments of Russian oil and gas head to Cuba in defiance of U.S. First cargo on course to arrive on Monday as Donald Trump taunts Communist Island while administration engages in talks. Two vessels headed for energy-starved Cuba carrying Russian oil and fuel are due to arrive as early as next week in defiance of U.S. President Donald Trump's energy embargo, according to maritime intelligence communities. If the ships arrive, there will be Cuba's first energy shipments in 3 months. The island was plunged into a nationwide blackout, with its entire grid collapsed on Monday before gradually regaining power on Tuesday, deepening a bitter economic crisis. The Hong Kong-flagged Seahorse, believed to be carrying some 2,700 tons of Russian gas, was headed towards the island after appearing to divert course last month. The ship is estimated to arrive in Cuba on Monday. So it's been out there for 20 days? What do they have? You got to call this out eventually, right? It's estimated to arrive in Cuban naval. I've got to call this out. It's been out there since last month for 20 days. Don't tell me that this wasn't planned way ahead of time here. Right. Trump wants to do a floating of a friendly takeover. So what's their thing? Install solar panels. Oh, yeah. Tell us how that works out for you. What, this is in the Wall Street Journal. story by Lara Seligman. What U.S. Marines can do to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz? I don't think it's closed. I just think people aren't going through it. Marine Corps unit expected to arrive in the Middle East next week could help seize Iran's strategically important islands near the Strait. So, President Trump is pressing aides and allies to find ways to reopen the Strait of Hormuz as gas prices rise. His best bet might be the U.S. Marine Corps. Right. This is from CNBC. Oil prices in the news, $166 a barrel. Middle East oil gives clue to where oil prices could be headed if Iran war drags on. From the Financial Times. Trump ally warns U.S. economy not strong enough to cope with Iran war. One-time pick to lead Keys to Statistics, E.J. Antoni, says inflation was worse than we thought, even before the conflict. Donald Trump's one-time pick to lead the Bureau of Labor Statistics has said the U.S. economy is too weak to handle oil at $100 a barrel, as he warned of rising consumer prices triggered by the war in Iran. I tell you what I do. All right, we have two vehicles in our house. Three, if you include my father-in-law's. When I leave on Sunday night, everything is all topped off. Right, I don't know what the hell we're going to be doing when the shit hits the fan here. Shit hasn't hit the fan yet with this thing. The bond market is flashing a signal not seen before the 2008 crisis. By the way, why don't you do that this weekend? Check out your disaster supplies. See what you need. I know it's 6 months early. But guess what? Probably would be a really good idea to do that. Troubling developments unfold in the U.S. bond market on Thursday that has some investors drawing comparisons from the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis. I tell you what, that sucked, that 2008 financial crisis. The current problems start with rising oil prices as a result of the U.S.-Israeli war against Iran, which is raising the risk of stagflation and the prospect of a 2026 interest rate hike by the Federal Reserve. Brent crude, the global oil benchmark, briefly blew past $119 a barrel on Thursday as it has escalated and oil and gas infrastructure in the Persian Gulf. West Texas Intermediate crude oil briefly crossed $100 a barrel. Aye, aye, aye. So who's profiting off of this? Here. Jerome Powell, who spent over $2 billion on a new Federal Reserve building, said job creation in the U.S. has slowed to essentially zero, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said on Wednesday, as the Fed released its latest economic projections, which included slightly higher economic growth than previously projected, a little change to the unemployment rate. Altogether, Powell said, central bankers see a degree of stability in the labor market. But the thing that I think a good number of people on the committee are concerned about is just the very, very low level of job creation. Well, a lot of jobs are being eliminated because of AI. Well, believe me. Here. And this is from the White House. Again, I'm going to... Just because I'm reading press releases doesn't mean that I support that. But it's very important for me that we get all the information out there. And I'm like the only guy that reads press releases on the air. Right? This is from March 19th from the White House. Americans agree that Operation Epic Fury is an overwhelming success. Under the decisive leadership of President Donald J. Trump, Operation Epic Fury is delivering overwhelming, devastating success against the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. In just 3 weeks, America's unmatched military has obliterated the Iranian regime's air and naval capabilities, demolished its ballistic missile arsenal production facilities, and annihilated over more than 7,000 targets, and crippled its ability to fund and arm terrorist proxies. Right? Despite the relentless campaign by the fake news and radical left to manufacture tales of division to distract from his historic triumph, and it's clear the American people and President Trump's base stand firmly behind our warriors and their commander-in-chief as we accomplish the mission. Polling confirms unified support among President Trump's base, and they have all the things here. All right. So the Washington Post agrees with that. So does Rasmussen Report, so does Fox News. All right, so here's my question. We just read all the attacks here. How much more shit do they have over there in Iran or Iran? How much? How many more missiles? Because right now, they're still launching stuff. They're still being very effective. There appears to be running a defensive war here with this. I'm not a military guy. I don't know the correct terms all the time when it comes to this. So give me a little bit of leeway. I don't know. With that, are we successful or not? I couldn't tell you what this is. We're successful with some things and not other things. So the Department of Labor today did have two press releases. We're going to talk about the unemployment insurance weekly claims report, and right with that, again, I'm going to, as I point out every week when this comes out on Thursday, in the week ending March 14, the advance figure for seasonally adjusted initial claims was 205,000, a decrease of 8,000 for every week's unrevised level of 213,000. Four-week moving average was 210,750, a decrease of 750. The advance, right, and it goes through all of that. Here are the graphs. I don't know. Looks like the same as last March. I don't know. This is really a big deal. Look, almost the same as last March. And this is not seasonally adjusted initial claims. It mirrors the previous year almost, right, pretty much almost to a T here, both of these figures. So things are not getting better. Things are not getting worse. I mean, we're talking hairs here with this. So again, this is so you folks don't get manipulated. And we're at 45 minutes after the hour. Here we have Labor Department launches a new Center for Faith website. The U.S. Department of Labor today announced the launch of a website for the Center for Faith, following President Trump's executive order creating a White House House of Faith office and federal agencies, Centers for Faith. The Department Center for Faith webpage contains resources for Americans. Who may have faced religious discrimination in the workplace, as well as information for faith organizations on potential grant opportunities and retirement plans. Americans should not face discrimination in the workplace because of their religion. Our new Center for Faith website offers helpful guidance for American workers and faith organizations interested in competing for grants at the late Department of Labor, said U.S. Secretary of Labor Lori Chavez de Ramer. Thanks to President Trump, Americans' right to religious freedom is more protected than ever before. These news resources follow a recent decision from the Department to add language and funding opportunity announcements that encourages faith organizations to apply for discretionary grants open to the public. This webpage offers materials related to efforts combating all forms of religious discrimination, including Christian bias and anti-Semitism. Additionally, faith-related policy, contact information, three original resources. Here we have, I ran through this a little bit today, an interactive map. Right. So here we have civil rights, EEO law protecting against religious discrimination in the workplace. Yes. And it, right. And this is for Pennsylvania. And it gives you the summary of what the basic laws are here. So if you believe you've been discriminated against, you have 180 days, essentially. But it varies by state, if there's a state law, to report it. What else do we have? Okay, so that's Pennsylvania. Let's go down to New Jersey. Or New York, let's go with. Civil rights EEO law protecting against religious discrimination in the workplace. Religious freedom or other religion-related law. Relevant state offices, right? New York State human rights law prohibits discrimination in employment based on religion. Employers are required to make reasonable religious accommodation for an employee's sincerely held religious beliefs, unless doing so creates an undue hardship on the employer. Right. The Division of Human Rights enforces the New York State human rights law. Once you complete an initial discrimination report, it gets reviewed, and you know, it goes on and on and on. In order to file a complaint, right, they have a link here, and now in New Jersey, basically the same law, different name. New Jersey law against discrimination, LAD, prohibits discrimination bias-based harassment based on actual or perceived religion. Employers are obligated to provide a reasonable accommodation on the basis of religion, unless doing so would be an undue burden on their operations. Right? And let's see. Goes on and on. So that's all 50 states there. Right, and this all goes back to Title VII of the Civil Rights Act and subsequent lawsuits and policy decisions. A guide for faith organizations. And this was all established by the White House Faith Office via Executive Order 14205. President directed the White House Faith Office to lead 10 initiatives for policy implementation. Core principles, the Department of Labor's Center for Faith, equal opportunity, religious liberty, service to all, and focus on workforce outcomes. Assessing the Department of Labor's federal grants, right? The federal government offers two primary types of grants, which may be relevant to faith-based and community organizations. Discretionary grants, often directly awarded by federal agencies, and formula grants, funds distributed primarily to states, cities, or counties, which may then allocate resources to local organizations, including faith-based organizations. The Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act supports job training, apprentices, and employment services for adults. Then you have Youth Build, provides job training and educational services for opportunity youth ages 16 to 24 who left school without a secondary diploma. So if you were, for whatever reason, did not have a high school diploma. Reemployment services assists unemployed individuals, including those impacted by economic challenges like the post-COVID-19 recovery, and finding new jobs more quickly. I guess with the, you could go to grants.gov on that. I guess, right, and I'm drawing a little bit of an inference here, but I don't think it's much of an inference. With a lot of the COVID money that's still on the street there, the federal government wants it back. And there's been some stuff with that. From Health and Human Services, HHS in America, this is from March 12th, landmark collaboration to Advanced Women's Health, which is the HHS, and the American Urological Association. A new memorandum of understanding aims to educate clinicians and women on evidence-based local estrogen therapy for postmenopausal genitourinary syndrome of menopause and recurrent urinary tract infections. With that, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, through its Office on Women's Health, today announced a formal memorandum of understanding with the American Urological Association, the American Urological Education and Research, and the Urology Care Foundation together, the AUA, to promote the appropriate and evidence-based local use of local estrogen therapy in postmenopausal women, particularly those experiencing genitourinary syndrome of menopause and recurrent urinary, I'm afraid to even ask what that is. Right? With that, it seems inappropriate for me to talk about. Not inappropriate to talk about, just inappropriate for me to talk about. Okay, what else do we have here? Jobless claims. And one more story here. EPA proposes to give Colorado primacy to protect underground water resources. Today, the U.S. EPA announces proposed approval of the state of Colorado's request to administer permitting for Class 6 underground injection wells under the Safe Drinking Water Act. The proposal will support EPA's Powering the Great American Comeback initiative, which prioritizes clean and safe water for Americans, restoring the American energy dominance, and advancing cooperative federalism. EPA is accepting public comments on the proposal, my favorite word, through May 4th to 2026. Congress laid out a clear vision under the Safe Drinking Water Act for delegating decision-making from the EPA to the states. With that, right? Background, UIC programs under the Safe Drinking Water Act play a key role in our nation's economic future by protecting underground drinking water supplies and ensuring that byproducts of industrial and energy products are safely stored underground. Class 6 wells are used to inject carbon dioxide into deep rock formations for long-term underground storage, also known as geologic sequestration. That's all we got for today. Right? We talk about news on Thursday with this. I mean, you know, we could talk about it every day, but how stressed out do you want to be? I don't want to be stressed out. Maybe you're okay. Some people could only deal with life if they're stressed out. You know them, I know them. For Safety Wars and Safety FM, this is Jim Polzel signing off. Hopefully I'll see you this weekend with that.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
silently in the dark, a mechanical symphony, a spark, electric soldiers in the sky. Tell me, drones, can you dream, can you cry? Underneath the city lights, they fly, mapping.
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people, but somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.